Today is February the 3rd, 2010. This is Kathy Staley with Linda Cotant. And how I usually start is asking the demographic questions and then stop and check.
Okay.
So could you give just a brief overview, name, age, where you were born and raised?
My name is Linda Cotant, and that's C-O-U-T-A-N-T. I'm 42 years old. I was born and raised in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, west of Knoxville. Lived many years in Johnson City, Tennessee, and then came to the North Carolina Mountains in 1994.
I can't rewind that one,
okay,
but it always works, so we don't have problems with that. Okay. This machine is like 25 years old. I'm going to have to just break down and buy a new one, and I just
specialty.
I've had you for so long. Okay. So you're from Oak Ridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you know people from there?
Yeah. I have a real good friend named Erica Collins, and she's, you know, I don't even know how old she is. But her family were snake handlers.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, I mean, it's really fun talking to her because she's a lesbian and she has gender variancy as well.
Uh-huh.
And yet she has maintained this very traditional Appalachian beliefs. You know, when she was living up here, she'd once a month go to the church and drink strychnine and handle snakes.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, yet she has this partner that she's been with for years and years and years and years. And she's a biology major, and she says, yeah, I'm having this really big religious struggle because I don't believe in evolution, but I do. I'm like, oh gosh. She really had, yeah.
Wow, and I don't think I know her.
She's probably my age.
How old are you?
I'm 38.
Okay, so well, yeah, 4 year difference, that can mean a lot as far as, you know, where we are in school and whether our paths cross.
Right, and I think her sister was younger, so they wouldn't have even been connected that way.
Wow.
Okay. So you grew up in Oak Ridge, which is also in the Appalachian Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering, how did you first learn about homosexuality in general?
In
growing up?
Well, I think within myself, I was aware in kindergarten. I was very attracted to our student teacher who came into the classroom. And I remember I'd get kind of nervous if she was standing near me. And it wasn't just, you know, inspecting my vert kind of thing. But as far as whether there were others out there, I don't really remember when I first learned of it. But I do remember being about 6 years old and being on a canoe trip with my family and some other community members. And there were these two women. And they were on the trip. They were older. Of course, at that time, they may have been at most 50, but they rode back in the car with us back into town, and I remember being very fascinated by them. And I knew there was something different about them, and I knew there was something in me in them, but I don't think I could have necessarily identified it, but I very well remember that moment of riding in the car with them, and it was a VW bus, so I was actually sitting on the floor looking up at them, and long before seatbelts. But yeah, I had this awareness, and I thought there was something different about them, and I could tell that they were special to each other. And then I guess, you know, in elementary school, kids talk about fag and all that. It was very much a male awareness, I think, when the term homosexuality was understood. I remember for some reason my mother commenting, I don't know how this conversation got started, but she said, yeah, men try to get each other pregnant through their rear end. And it was an odd way, I thought to explain it, but for some reason that had come up in conversation when I was young. But I guess, you know, by junior high, I knew that there were lesbians, but I didn't know any. And for a long time, I thought I was the only one. Even though I didn't talk to anybody about it or act on it, I knew that I was different in that way, and I knew that I was attracted to other girls. But I didn't really have an outside context of, are there other people in Oak Ridge who are gay, and do they get together and hang out? You know, that was totally foreign to me.
Were you hearing things through the media about, like, Billie Jean King, or I guess Martina?
Yeah.
Was around that time coming out.
Yeah, I remember Billie Jean King coming out, but that was with some drama, you know, with this woman in a wheelchair, and I remember sensing judgment in other people about this, and that this really wasn't okay. And there was something that felt uneasy within me to hear about that. I remember I would have that mix of excitement and embarrassment when a made-for-TV movie would come on, and it was about two lesbians. I can't think of the actress's name right now, but she starred in one. I remember wanting to watch it, but also being afraid that my mother would realize what I was watching, and there would be implications then about me.
Did your parents talk about it, or any community members, church or school, on a less condemning than saying fag and
such? Yeah, I think it was talked about in our church, which was very progressive. You know, Oak Ridge had a lot of scientists in it. These were very well-educated people. Our church, you know, mirrored that. And so while they were very socially aware people as a congregation, we talked about it as a social issue, but again, it was never really like a personal issue. And that same couple that I mentioned having been on the canoe trip, one of those women did go to our church. And so I always suspected, but she never, you know, really came out and was a role model. I think I lacked role models growing up. I must say that because of the type of community I grew up in, it wasn't like a religious condemning attitude about homosexuality. It just wasn't really talked about. Or if it was talked about, it was on an intellectual level. And yeah, these people exist, but no names and faces are really coming up.
Right. And you were probably in high school when Rock Hudson came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the whole AIDS thing started when I was in high school. But I guess I didn't really identify with him so much because he was a man.
Mm-hmm.
Identified more with Billie Jean King, but that was when I was a little bit younger and hadn't quite come to grips with what was going on with inside me.
Mm-hmm.
Just that it felt weird to hear about it on the news.
And then you went to college in Southwest Virginia.
Yes, Emory and Henry College. It's a small liberal arts school. There were about 800 students when I was there. It was very small. Methodist owned and operated. I didn't come out in college. Some people did, and it was met with, I guess maybe a mix of hostility and how dare you kind of thing, and kind of freakish. You know, these people were really different. They weren't really welcomed as part of us. Diversity wasn't celebrated like it is now.
How were they different? Like, in their dress, or were they just interpreted by
people? Interpreted by,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for clarifying that. No, they seemed very normal. And it was interesting, there was a group of us, we were all very close friends. We all came out after graduating. Some of my other friends, I had gone at this point, they came out like their senior year. But it was interesting, it's just like, oh, he's gay? She's gay? Oh my gosh, no wonder we were all such good friends. We connected, but we didn't really understand on what level and in what way. So that was interesting, you know, as we were able to mature a little bit and see things in a clearer vision in hindsight. But, you know, the only people who were really out were either the female basketball players who were very butch and, I guess in some ways, not real likable. I mean, we didn't really connect on that in other ways. So those were the only people I saw as out lesbians, and I didn't connect with them. And so, yeah, I didn't want to be like them, which was a self-condemnation I'm aware of now. But yeah, it wasn't really a safe place to explore that side of myself, which was good in a way, and that it kept me focused on school and academics. And, you know, I did very well. I was an overachiever, putting lots of energy into being a good student and being a campus leader.
And then you moved to another Appalachian
area. My first job out of college was in Johnson City, Tennessee. So I moved back from Virginia to Tennessee. And that's where I did have my first relationship with a woman. And I was so excited about that. It was kind of like, oh, now I can be me because no one knows me. I didn't have this past or some sort of campus reputation to keep up or anything. So it was kind of like a clean slate, and I could start fresh. And yeah, I had a job where I worked night shift. This was at a newspaper. And so there were other people who also worked the night shift. And as was custom, you work till deadline, you go out for a beer or go to someone's house and hang out and talk for a while and go to bed like at 3 a.m. So it was a very social kind of work environment. We were young, could stay up late, and so in the course of mixing with lots of other young people, I did meet a lesbian on staff, and we started dating each other. And it was kind of this awareness of, oh my gosh, there are other people like me, you know, and she had friends who were lesbians, and suddenly this whole community emerged, which I had never experienced before. And it was nice, it was eye-opening in that it wasn't what I had assumed a lesbian community might be.
What had you assumed?
I'd always thought that lesbians were somehow independent and self-sufficient. So it was a bit of a surprise to realize that my assumption didn't ring true, and I was seeing codependent relationships, things that I had totally stereotyped as being heterosexual, and realizing, but from an immature standpoint and a judgmental standpoint, that these types of relationship issues are universal. I was disappointed in a way. I was like, I wanted women, lesbians, to be strong women and independent, self-sufficient, which is how I had been up to that point. But I was also stuffing all these other things and letting independence kind of take dominance as I compensated for weaknesses in other areas. So, you know, it was a mix then, that excitement of finding community, coming out, but then realizing, oh, this isn't what I thought it would be.
How do you think living in the Appalachian region, when you were having the relationship, definitely, but possibly as college and high school student, how it affected your development of your sexual orientation?
Well, I definitely think the church played a role, or maybe I should say my perception of the church. I went to a small Methodist college, and I was actually Presbyterian, or raised in a Presbyterian church, so in some ways I didn't know that much about the Methodist theology, but it seemed rather conservative in that this wasn't really mentioned or talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So I think from that age, 18 to 22, I was formulating that the church doesn't view this as okay, God doesn't view it as okay, and viewing God, of course, as separate from me at that point, I was always judging me. And then, of course, it was a rural area. These were, cow pastures all around the college campus, and I think, again, there's this assumption that a rural community is going to be kind of backwards, not real accepting, although I didn't really have much proof of that, except for within the college campus itself, when my peers were not accepting, classmates who came out as gay. And then in Johnson City, there was actually a big gay community, and there was a very large gay bar. In fact, in the 5 years that I lived there, there were as many as 3 gay bars at one time. And each one was a little different as far as a clientele and what they provided there as far as entertainment. But, I mean, that's pretty significant. And so it was an interesting mix then, too, of this rural conservative area, you know, fundamental Christianity with a lot of out people.
And how would you describe out? I mean, is it the out where they would be wearing shirts and acknowledging to everyone in their life? Or is it the out where you play on the softball team and you're assuming everyone realizes because you're on the softball team that you're a lesbian?
Yeah, out in the latter sense. Yeah, there would be women, you know, playing softball, men going to the bars. But yeah, in the workplace, it wouldn't necessarily have been talked about. Although where I worked, we did have a high number of gay people, all the same age. So we had our little clique.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say probably universally, most of those people weren't out to families. The gay bar was a safe place.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was a group of girls who had come down from Southwest Virginia who were coal miners. And they lived together. I mean, they were very much a couple, but I don't think they really acknowledged that except for in the gay bars. And Johnson City was kind of a hub for Tennessee, Virginia, and I guess to a degree North Carolina too. So you had a lot of people coming from outside of town to have a safe place where they could be out. Of course, there were some people who were very out in Johnson City in that community.
Mm-hmm.
We had two different nonprofit AIDS groups, and as a newspaper reporter, I was plugged in with them and was covering the issue quite a bit. So I knew people that way. But I also know that there's a lot of prejudice against these nonprofit AIDS groups, and it was my job to cover the nonprofits in general for the newspaper I worked at. And so I spent time with these people going down there, and I had a health situation where I ended up being out of work for about 6 weeks. And it was interesting, when I came back, I was hearing the rumors, Linda has AIDS. And she got it from going down to that storefront where they help people with that. And, you know, that's not how you get AIDS at all. And my health condition was not at all related to that. But it was interesting the jumps that people would make in their minds. And these were some of the locals, you know, who worked at the paper. They worked in different departments than where I was. The generally blue-collar type of departments. But yeah, it was interesting that they were talking about me that way. And it was weird to be talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never really had that experience before. But I did, for the paper, write a series of newspaper articles about AIDS in the church, which was very enlightening, and I won an award for it. And I had someone tell me at Johnson City's first Gay Pride weekend event that I, as a writer, made such a huge difference in the gay community there through that article and other articles that I brought, or that I wrote, bringing attention to AIDS in the gay community and how people were responding. And it's really kind of neat because I never thought about it that way before. I mean, I never thought of myself as advancing the gay cause. But I did, just through my work. So that was neat. And it was kind of neat to be acknowledged that way, I guess. It's like, wow, I made a difference. I guess I did. To some people, anyway. But they did have a gay pride weekend.
What year was that?
This was like 94, 95. So, yeah, I mean, in some ways, that was kind of early, you know, to be doing that. And I remember there was a young man in my neighborhood who dressed as a woman. And, of course, he dressed as a woman at the gay bar, but then I would also see him walking the streets. And I don't mean that as, yeah, he just walking the neighborhood. And apparently he lived with his mother, and his mother and her friends all accepted him as living as a woman. And he'd wear lots of makeup and carry a handbag. So there was that kind of acceptance, which was surprising. But it was all kind of within the family, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I think what I've come to learn is that so much of what we fear, the reaction from other people, is merely a projection of our own fear and self-judgment. Because when I've come out, really come out, not just to my family, but to my coworkers and community, I don't find any prejudice. People are very accepting. But I think I had to first go through the process of accepting myself I'm truly loving myself for who I am. And yeah, and then that is mirrored back to me.
Right. I wanted to go back to what you were talking about with the three gay bars and find out a little bit more about what they were, in their names and location. Were they in Charlotte, the gay bars back in the 70s were in the not safe sections of Charlotte? Was it also in the poor sections of Johnson City? And how would you compare the bars, I'm loading lots of questions here, I realize, to other larger cities, less rural cities?
Okay, yeah. I guess in many ways, gay bars in the cities I've gone to and the ones in Johnson City were not that different. Of the three in Johnson City, there was New Beginnings. Mm-hmm. That was the largest. And I guess it's still there. And it used to be billed as the largest show bar in the Southeast. And they had two drag queen performances every Friday and Saturday night, you know, three or four queens at a time. The other one was called the Meat Rack. And it was more of a dancing, shoot pool kind of place. The other one, I think may have been more of a lesbian bar. And it too was, pool tables and maybe a dance floor, but no great soundtrack like New Beginnings. I mean, it had the lights, the everything. And it was the biggest of the three, so that's where most people would go. There was some criticism that the family that owned it knew that they had a monopoly. And so there was what we considered a high cover charge, especially then like on New Year's Eve. And it was like, you know, as gay friendly as they are, and their one son at least was gay, we also kind of felt that they were taking advantage of the population. They knew we really didn't have many other places to go. They were it, so they were making a killing. When I say it's a large bar, I mean, it would probably hold 500 people. And it was located in North Johnson City on North Rhone Street, which was a main, business drag. It was just a couple blocks from the mall. And it had one of those marquee signs, with the flashing arrow. And it was kind of hidden behind a fence, and it was sort of a nondescript building. So just driving by, you probably wouldn't notice it if you were, a straight person. But we knew it was there.
Mm-hmm.
The Meat Rack had a more prominent sign, and so did the lesbian bar. I think it might have been called Triangles. And it actually had a triangle as a tall sign outside the building, which was pretty bold at the time. But it was kind of like Johnson City as a community knew they were there and kind of left them alone. All of Johnson City had a crime problem when I was there, and I can't really say though that these were in particularly seedy parts of town. I mean, they weren't the suburbs. They were either in downtown or the main shopping strip.
Mm-hmm.
But again, as compared to gay bars, say in Richmond or Atlanta, I found pretty much the same things. The accents may have been a little different. The attire may be slightly different.
Right.
But the
soundtrack and...
Yeah, the drinks, all that was the same.
Mm-hmm.
The purpose of hanging out.
How has living in Appalachian affected how you behave with regards to your sexuality?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of how you behave with your partners and...
Mm-hmm. I guess moving here in 94 was a bit of a shock in that there wasn't a gay bar culture.
Mm-hmm.
The socializing in Boone was far more private and I guess intimate, potlucks and gatherings in people's homes, and you had to meet people to introduce you to people to then get invited to parties. Just as any group of friends, you know, would do.
That difficult for you as a single woman?
It was, yeah. And I was 26, so I was kind of caught in that age between the students and between the professionals. So even if I were straight, I might have had a hard time adjusting. But yeah, where do you go to meet gay people? There's really not a place in Boone. So it was a bit of a challenge that way. And also, I was in that age where I was coming out of the party scene. And I had stopped drinking for health reasons. And that, yeah, created a different set of parameters, I guess. You know, who do you hang out with? And what do you do when you hang out? That kind of thing. But I think as far as, like, going out with people, again, I may have in some ways assumed the worst about a rural area when that really wasn't true. It does seem like, though, even then, I noticed that people in North Carolina were a little bit more open than people in Johnson City, Tennessee. And I didn't know if it was because it was a different type of university than ETSU, because, mm-hmm. I mean, Johnson City was a college town, too, but they were two very different universities.
How would you compare them?
I'm not sure what the politically correct way to... how I describe it at the time is that Johnson City was just more redneck. People in North Carolina seemed a bit more refined and aware of cultural differences. But, yeah, I guess I was still hesitant at that point to, you know, hold hands in public, even in Boone. And I think it was a matter of being self-conscious. There was some degree of being judged and discriminated or having something said to me. But it was also just not being full acceptance of who I was. But now, at 42, and being partnered and having had long-term girlfriends prior to the relationship I'm in now, I really don't have a problem with holding hands. And I just am who I am. And that's where I'm finding people don't really care. I don't think everybody's watching me at a restaurant, whether I hold someone's hand or not, or, you know, reach across the table and touch them during dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Those things just don't bother me anymore, so I'm not expecting it to happen. I'm not expecting the criticism or prejudice. But I think, too, there's been a great resource in the lesbian community now, in the 2000s, since a particular couple had come into town from Florida and really galvanized the social networking here. And I think they've been great role models in showing that when you have love and fear and you don't expect something bad to happen, nothing bad will happen. And so just be yourself, and basically people don't care. And so that's how I've come to live, and I think it really does make a difference. So there are a lot of gay people in Boone. they may not dress like gay people in other cities or have the social structures, you know, gay culture, I mean, gay bar cultures, but we're definitely here. And I think people are in very strong acceptance of that.
Do you think that the locals are aware of the size and breadth and scope of the lesbian community and the gay male community? But that's a bit of a different creature.
I don't think if it's in their awareness, they're really going to see it. I don't know. Again, when you say local culture, do you mean people affiliated with the university or outside of that?
Outside of that. Like when the women's chat groups and the dinner groups go into public accommodations, are people aware that that's who this group of 10 to 20 women?
I think, we usually get put off in a separate room. Not because we're gay, but because of the size of our group, which would happen with any large group.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if people are really so much aware of us being there, except that we might be a little loud. The wait staff, I'm sure, know. Mm-hmm. But we really have never had any problems with that because we also tip well. I think in large part people aren't really aware of what goes on around them. And in terms of where they go socially, you know, a rural church, they may not have someone go there who's gay, which means they're not going to see them there. That's a really good question. Like, I guess I haven't thought about it from that perspective too much anymore because I'm just very comfortable in my own skin. It's kind of like, too, as you come into that awareness of we're all one anyhow, those differences just kind of slough off, and mm-hmm. I don't think of them as being barriers. Think of there being barriers.
Yeah. A lot of people at the university also aren't as well connected with what's going on in the non-university world. It's very easy in Boone, I think, to surround yourself by a group of accepting people.
Yeah.
And not be connected at all with the people who would have problems.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have a child in school or you are a member of some civic organization that...
Yeah. I'm a member of a very progressive church here in town that's very open and affirming to gays and lesbians and transgender individuals too. So, yeah, I'm not even running into conflict there. So, yeah, I mean, from this point in my life and at this age, I can say rural Appalachia is very accepting of gays and lesbians.
Mm-hmm. What would you consider to be the biggest differences then between rural and urban? But you really haven't lived in a non-Appalachian urban area, but you've probably traveled some.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've traveled to, I guess, almost every state in the nation. And I've, you know, visited gay friends in cities, so I've, you know, gone to parties with them or gone to bars with them. And yeah, it's funny. I guess it's just probably the biggest difference is where you go to meet other gay people. Is there a physical building that you can go to? In cities, there are always the gay bars or even gay coffee houses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many businesses you can actually be segmented like that. Yeah, in Baltimore, a friend of mine took me to a gay coffee house in Delhi, and that was unusual. Yeah, you don't have that in a rural area if you only have one or two coffee shops, period. I would say that's probably the biggest difference.
You had mentioned earlier with in terms of moving to Johnson City that no one knew you there.
Mm-hmm.
Could that also play a factor in the whole rural-urban difference?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You mean how I perceived it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, simply being perception.
'Cause I've talked to people who grew up in Watauga County and have stayed here, and their concept of what they can do it within the community at large is different than what you're describing. They're this particular person is more concerned about how he behaves because he doesn't want it to, you know, circle around all these people that he's interconnected with peripherally.
I guess, and do you fear the people that you know? I've gotten to a point now where I don't. I have heard someone say, this is a woman who's probably in her late 40s or 50s, who grew up here all her life. She said, there's no way you can be out in Boone. Well, I know a lot of people who are out in Boone, and they do very fine. They don't get fired from their jobs. But this woman, I think, believes that you will. And if that's what you truly believe, then that's what you'll experience.
Right.
Regardless of your belief and whether you're gay or straight.
Yeah. So, I wanted to ask a couple of things related to your work at Appalachian.
Uh-huh.
you came here in 94, mm-hmm. and that was around the time they started, the gay student organization started painting the tunnel for Coming Out Day, and then every day after Coming Out Day, it would be painted over with slurs, and it increasingly became more violent and was targeting individuals.
Wow.
And I was wondering, as a person who was an employee, did that ever affect your world as an employee?
Not really, because it seemed like there was a disconnect between the student population and the employee population. And I don't even think I was aware of that going on. I work in public affairs here at the university, so we're promoting the university. Of course, we focus on the positive, not on the controversies, unless they're getting picked up by the media. And I don't think that particular case was. I don't think I would have ever felt threatened. I think I felt, as a professional, I don't need to be discussing my personal life. I did have a situation where other staff members were kind of making jokes about what they perceived as my homosexuality, even though I didn't consciously come out to them. I was invited on a double date by a coworker and a friend of theirs from church, and I really wasn't interested in this guy who worked somewhere in town. I mean, even if I were straight, I don't think I would have wanted to go out in the situation, so I declined. And I said, I just don't date men right now. And it was funny that I felt that she could take that however she wanted. Either I just went through a bad breakup, you know, I'm just not dating, period. But she took it as that I date women, which was an interesting conclusion. I wasn't expecting that. And so apparently she said something to a coworker, which is overheard by a gay coworker, who then came back to me and said, you know, they're kind of making fun of you. It's like, I didn't even come out to them. but I do remember trying to keep my private life private, just because I'm private by nature.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to your original question, yeah, I don't think what was going on with the students was really affecting me as an employee. And I didn't know students to be sharing that kind of information with me either, about what it was really like to be a gay student.
Mm-hmm.
And I, having never been an out student in college, wasn't really seeking them to have that kind of shared experience. I mean, I wasn't used to being involved with a gay organization, so it's not like as an employee I was seeking to be an advisor or a mentor or something, because it just wasn't part of my awareness.
Right. I was wondering how you perceived the acceptance level as an employee, and I realize things kind of changed into 2000, so
mm-hmm.
if you could compare your first 6-7 years and then when we started getting more activity on campus in the 2000s.
Yeah, I think it's very different. There does seem to be a greater acceptance, and maybe I'm also aware of more gay employees. Like I said earlier, I came in at 26. I didn't really identify with gay people who were in their 50s who worked on campus. But then suddenly, you know, when I hit like 30, there were young PhDs coming and getting jobs on the faculty who were gay and openly gay. And I think it's through their being here, they suddenly were taking an active role in forming things like the gay faculty staff group, and then building up the student groups, and then building up the academic side, you know. I think it's amazing that we even have an LGBT center now compared to how it was, you know, 15 years ago. I think, too, probably with any organization, the old conservatives leave. You know, they retire out. they pass away, I think people are more accepting in general, and these people are now coming into greater leadership roles at the university, so I think it's becoming more accepted from that sense, because it's just the right thing to do. Now, I certainly value and appreciate all the work that went on behind the scenes to make these kinds of things happen. Some people were really working hard when I wasn't really talking openly about being gay. So I really appreciate the work that they've done. It's helped all of us. But yeah, I would say it's definitely more accepting now on campus than it used to be. And I think that's reflective of probably a greater social acceptance of diversity, too.
Of all forms of diversity, you mean, or specifically with sexual orientation?
I'd say sexual orientation, yeah.
What about gender identity? Has that changed in your experience?
Yeah, I think certainly. I guess it's interesting how the gay experience has grown to encompass gender issues and transgender individuals. And I know of a handful of transgender students, and you know, we wouldn't have seen that, I don't think, 10 years ago. I don't know as a society in general if we would have 10 years ago. I think, you know, as people talk about that more and young people more fully embrace the ambiguity of their gender, then we're all, you know, educated and can, I guess, are forced maybe to be more accepting because they're here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know that with your work with the News Bureau, you have written articles about LGBT issues, not dozens, series, but you have written about it.
Uh-huh.
I was wondering what has been the response of colleagues and the readers.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, for many years I was editor of the alumni magazine, Appalachian Today. And so I saw it as the magazine's responsibility to report on all activities of the university, not just those that were deemed acceptable by however few or a conservative majority. So over the years, it had included coverage of the queer film series and the LGBT Center. And, you know, I wasn't pushing an agenda as a lesbian who was in charge of this publication. It was just campus news. But I do remember getting a fair amount of negative feedback about a story. It was actually about women's studies. The queer film series just happened to be a brief mention as part of the larger women's studies activities on campus. And I had a few alumni either call or write and complain that, you know, they can't leave their Appalachian Today on the kitchen table because their high school son's going to come along and read about queer film series. How dare you put that in my alma mater's magazine? Yeah, and then that prompted a discussion within my division, my higher-ups. Well, why do we even put those things in the magazine if we are aware that it could create some controversy and that people are going to stop giving money to the university because they're upset? And so, yeah, I was privy to conversations where administrators, you know, mid-level administrators were saying, well, you know, I find it disgusting too, but, you know, that's what is deemed a legitimate program within our university. And so it's like, well, what a shame that you find that disgusting, but it's part of the educational process to bring films to students' awareness. So yeah, I guess in some ways I've received far more cutting remarks through my work than on a personal level.
Have you felt constrained by the administrators in your division? As a lesbian specifically, if they're making comments like this, are they making other not maybe so direct comments.
I had a boss for a while who had said a couple of things, which at that time I interpreted as demeaning and kind of pointed towards the gay lesbian. And I never knew if he knew I was gay or not. So it was always this, what did he mean by that? And I should have just asked him. But I didn't have the wherewithal then. I don't think it was ever personal. It was more, like I said, people were concerned that if people got, I should say administrators were concerned that if readers and donors didn't like what was happening on campus, they would withhold their money. Therefore, it's my responsibility then to make sure they keep giving money by the information that we share with them. But coming from a journalist standpoint, I wasn't going to withhold news that we, you know, have a queer film series or that we've created an LGBT center out of fear that someone's not going to give their $1,000 or $5,000 or whatever. And it's interesting because in the time difference between the article on, and again, it was an article on women's studies that mentioned the queer film series, to the time that we announced the LGBT center, I didn't get any negative feedback from the LGBT center. And that was a difference of maybe 7 or 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was just kind of a non-story. I mean, yeah. And we even had the rainbow flag as our graphic in the magazine. That was far more out there than what we had done with women's studies and the queer film series.
Well, on to flip my question,
mm-hmm.
have you received any support or encouragement
mm-hmm.
from your coworkers or supervisors to include more information about LGBT issues?
Yes. I'm trying to think of a specific example.
Or readers.
I haven't heard many comments from gay readers. I mean, I know they're out there, but they haven't been real vocal in support. I think there are some key administrators in the equity office that were very thankful, you know, grateful. Thank you for putting that in the magazine. That really helps a lot. And they were both gay and straight. I think the chancellor was very pleased. Chancellor Peacock was very pleased with the LGBT coverage. Prior to that, I think the feedback we'd gotten about the queer film series was kind of a thorn in the side, you know, to the previous administration. But I never, let me clarify that I never had any direct negative comments from Chancellor Borkowski related to that issue at all, either personally or professionally. It was more, I guess, the people around him. But yeah, I think people generally have been supportive, and sometimes the support is measured by the non-response. Because when people are upset, they're going to call.
Mm-hmm.
When they're not upset, they're not going to call.
Okay.
So if we could get something out there and nobody raises an eyebrow, then I think that's saying it was okay. So what I was saying is just that I think when people don't complain, it's sort of like this tacit approval.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought about that the terminology may have been a difference in response? Queer, which is from some people's point of view inflammatory, and then LGBT, which a lot of people don't even know what it stands for.
That's true. Well, that's a good point. I never thought about it that way. Yeah. And I guess, you know, that raises the question of, you know, we as a gay community chose to embrace the word queer, but people who aren't part of our culture probably still view it as a derogatory comment, one that they even may have created. So yeah, I guess it, in some ways it is inflammatory. I never thought about it that way, but when we had a headline of LGBT center opens on campus, maybe most readers didn't even know what it was. If you don't know what a gay flag is, you wouldn't have gotten that either. I think, yeah, that probably is very true. I don't know what you do about it, you know, as an administration.
Right. I wanted to ask a couple more questions about ASU.
Okay.
If you think that there is, and if you do, what is the relationship between having a liberal arts institution and then the in-migration of more diverse populations affecting the broader community acceptance of LGBT issues?
Well, I don't know if the liberal arts part would really have any connection. At least not how I see it. But I think, campus has certainly grown in its diversity in the 15 years I've been here. And anytime you have people who are different from you, however different that might be, however you define that or can see it, it just, I think, increases the greater acceptance across the board. I think I forgot your question.
If there's a relationship between a liberal arts institution, but this is a comprehensive university.
Yeah. Well, I mean, take Appalachian with 16,000 students, and you compare it to where I went to school with 800. By sheer volume of people, you're going to have more types of people. And when you have them, different types of groups and clubs and centers and everything, and it's seen and it's visible, then I think it all kind of gets watered down, you know, and that it's all okay.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to talk to you about the faculty staff group here on campus, because you have been involved with keeping it afloat. Were you part of the creation at the very beginning with Jill Enan and Anne from Anthropology, whose name starts with a K?
I do remember her. I honestly don't remember how I got involved. Because at some point I volunteered to coordinate the lunches, mm-hmm. and I forget how that came about. Oh, I know. I did go to one or two. It was up at the Broyhill Inn. That's right. We used to meet up there. And at the front, it was Jill and maybe Kim who organized that. And it was fun. It was a great way to network and, you know, meet people who otherwise maybe wouldn't have come across paths with. And for some reason, they stopped doing it, or they had just gotten too busy to schedule something. And so I kind of threw out the idea of, everybody get together again. And they said, well, we'll schedule something. And if you want, just send out an email. Because I guess at that point, a listserv had been created. So I just took it on for a semester or two to try to schedule them. But I think, you know, it kind of comes in waves, depending on who wants to take that on. I wish more people would stay involved with it. I think it's a great way to network and build a community, and just especially for newcomers, show them, you know, we are here, and we're in all different offices, and it's a great way to learn the campus. You know, and if you need an in to some department, you know, call so and so because they're part of the group. I guess what I was looking for at the time was, more gay friends. And, a greater openness within me just to meet other people and expand my social networking.
How do you think that the group has succeeded, or challenges that they've faced?
Well, it seemed like a significant challenge was whether we were going to be a recognized group on campus, and there was actually a procedure to go through and forms to sign and officers, and then it was just like this is getting too formal, but we were also limiting ourselves by not being an organized group, because then we couldn't rent or reserve space on campus for our group. So we were limited in where we could meet. So I think that's probably cost us some membership, and that of the few choices we did have to places to get together for lunch, some people didn't like them, so they didn't come for that reason. I think part of the problem not wanting to organize was that people didn't want to put their name on paper, which indicates there's still a fear for being out, which was kind of ironic, given, I guess, some of the people who were in the group. It's like, oh, you'll do all these things, but you won't sign on as an officer. Yeah, I guess that has always been kind of curious to me. But then I know we're all busy. And, yeah, it's, I think, a matter of time commitments, and how important is it really? And then I guess people, once they know certain gay friends, they're content, you know, with their circle staying that way, not wanting to expand it. I still think it's a great group. I mean, I'd like to see it become more active, but I also recognize the reasons maybe that it doesn't.
Do you think it could do anything else besides having luncheons and then, I guess, the listserv?
Yeah, we talked about, you know, connecting more with students, but then that took, you know, initiative to make that happen. And I know I volunteered to try to get that together, and I dropped the ball on it because I didn't have time. And yeah, I think it takes commitment from all of us to really stick with it. But yeah, I mean, there's lots of potential. We as a group could do lots of things. We've talked about funding scholarships. It's a great idea. Would it actually happen? I don't know. I think there is more that can be done, but I don't think it's been a priority for enough people to make it happen.
And then finally, where do you think the LGBT population of Watauga County is headed toward? They recently had in the county, no, it was the town, making several statements in support of LGBT people, including adding sexual orientation and gender identity into their employment clause. And I know they're considering the domestic partner benefits through the city as well.
Oh, great.
Where do you see, having been here this long, where do you see it heading?
Wow. Oh, I think it it would be wonderful, and I think probably is inevitable that there will be greater rights granted to LGBT population. Because it is a matter of civil rights, and I think just like the, you know, civil rights movement in the 60s, it's just going to evolve into something that's got to be, will be more widely accepted. And yeah, so domestic partnerships, I think, are going to come to fruition. I think, too, maybe in a sense, when we have greater acceptance, we might lose some of that cohesiveness that pulls us together, because it's us against them, you know. When it's not us against them anymore, you know, we're also ordinary. So I think it'll be interesting to see, you know. I think it's very positive in that we'd have greater acceptance, but you might lose some of that cause-driven energy that has, you know, propelled some of the things that we see on campus.
Okay, thank you.